So now we've talked about the natural immune system in a natural world with no vaccines involved. What would have happened? You predict essentially somewhere around a year in, we would have seen a real just decline into, you know, a stasis, not necessarily having eradicated the virus from the planet, but have found a balance with it where we have enough immunity and enough people that keep it in check, our immune systems, that it really can't turn it, you know, it's stopped being a pandemic. Yeah. What would have been a 1 year, clear we're past 1 year, we are still having issues with this virus that appear, and we hear about variants and mutations and these things. What was it about the vaccine that appears to have elongated maybe, or how does the vaccine change that experience or that outcome?
Well, as I mentioned right from the beginning, and I'm just going to repeat this because this is literally what I said at the very, very beginning and what will lead to the explanation to your question. Never, ever, never, ever use vaccines that do not induce sterilizing immunity. So to your point, that cannot prevent infection. Never, ever use this type of vaccines to do mass vaccination in the midst of a pandemic. If you get infected normally, we're not talking about a pandemic, you get infected, there is a viral load, of course, due to the infection, right? And then almost after you have transmitted the virus, very often it's like this, the antibodies start to mount. So the antibodies, the peak is reached after the bulk of the viral replication has already taken place. So that means these antibodies that you generate can no longer put this virus under pressure. It's already gone almost by the time these antibodies mount. If you are now vaccinating people during a pandemic, that means that the antibodies are mounting while they can be confronted with the virus. There you start to put immune pressure on the virus. So these combinations of doing massively, putting massively, having a population that massively, because you do mass vaccination, put pressure on the virus, combined with vaccination programs that are conducted in the midst of a pandemic, this can only lead to natural selection of the fittest. And because many people are in a similar situation, this will be this variant that then can overcome the pressure will, of course, be enriched in the population, and it will ultimately become the dominant variant. And you can see many studies have been done. I have a study here from Canada where they introduced mass vaccination, and in August they had 50% of the Delta variant circulating. 1 month later, they had 100% was Delta. So we have never ever been saying that these more infectious variants were generated by the vaccines or by mass vaccination. No, they were already circulating. They existed already. But what mass vaccination has done, it has within a short time frame generated an excellent breeding ground for these more infectious variants, so that now their propagation has exploded as a result of the mass vaccination.
I have an analogy for this I've been thinking about a lot. I want to run it by you. Let's say in terms of sort of the vaccine, like this idea of, you know, it's not that it's mutating. It's not like it's like growing arms and legs and things like that. It's that you're just selecting a variant that's already there, but it wasn't the popular one. It wasn't the dominant variant. The dominant was the more mild form of the illness. So in my analogy, imagine you're a scuba diver and you're going swimming and you're swimming in the ocean and there's killer whales in the ocean. Now, the killer whales we know rarely attack human beings, but on a rare occasion, they've been known to be hungry and decide to attack a human being. There's also sharks in the ocean. Sharks we know love to attack human beings and do it all the time. They're much more dangerous to human beings. But killer whales outcompete sharks in the situation with killer whales. They can eat a shark, so you don't usually find sharks and killer whales in the same water. But if the swimmer, the scuba diver decides I'm afraid of the killer whales and that rare risk that I could be killed by them, so the swimmer kills the killer whales, wipes them out, what you do is you take away that environment where they're out competing the sharks. Now the sharks come in because there's no killer whales around, and now the sharks become dangerous to the scuba diver. Much, much more dangerous. They're the more dangerous variant. Now all we have left is sharks, and now all of us are in danger of getting to the water. Is that sort of...
Yeah, the analogy would even be better if one would say the scuba diver is using a weapon that can only kill,
killer
the
whales.
The killer whales.
Okay.
So the weapon, the immune system, so to say, doesn't work for the sharks.
Got it.
It only works for the killer whales. So he's firing with a weapon underwater, but that weapon doesn't work for the sharks. It only works for the killer whales. And that weapon is the immune system, of course. The sharks can resist. The killer whales cannot resist, right? Yeah.
And so your concern is that the more we vaccinate, the more we're wiping out a virus our bodies could really handle fairly easily, except for a small few, and now selecting for a much more dangerous virus. And this process keeps going. Now, I want to play a clip by a guy named Z-Dog, does an internet talk show, and he interviewed a very famous doctor here, Dr. Paul Offit. I guess he's a virologist. He's invented vaccines or made vaccines. I'm not sure if you've ever come in contact with Paul Offit.
No, he's very well known because he wrote to is one of the editors of the most famous vaccine book, together with Stan Plotkin and Walt Ornstein.
So, right.
You cannot not know him.
Okay. So he's a big deal. So, I mean, this would be an equal peer. He's asked about your theory on pressuring the virus and making it deadly, and this whole thing that you've been very worried about. This is what he had to say in this interview.
There's a guy, Gert von den Bosche. Have you heard about this guy? Yeah, so apparently a virologist in Europe has his premise, and you can maybe explain it better than me, is that, by vaccinating during a pandemic, we're putting pressure on the virus to emerge, vaccine escape variants, and that we've primed our immune system, therefore follow-up vaccines won't be very effective. Something along those lines, to paraphrase. Am I paraphrasing that right? And what do you think about this? Because it has a grip on the public, this idea.
I with what evidence? I mean, you have, for example, so you have measles, for example. We've had a measles vaccine since the early 1960s. Measles is like this virus, a single-stranded RNA virus. Measles, like this virus, does mutate. Nonetheless, despite 60 years of measles vaccine, we have not seen strains generated that resist immunity from vaccination. I mean, flu is different. Flu mutates on a daily basis. I mean, that virus is a moving target. This virus also mutates, but much slower than, say, influenza does. We'll see. I mean, the notion that you're creating you've created a population either from natural infection or immunization that is likely to have several years of protection. That's a good thing. And although this virus may mutate to the point that it escapes recognition by current immunity from vaccination or immunization, then you come up with a second generation vaccine. That's what you do. I don't think that's going to happen, actually. I think that the viruses, there's probably been already about 12,000 mutations on this virus already. I mean, I think you may get to the point if they're resisting all immunity, or meaning that it's as if you never got the vaccine, you never got naturally infected. I think that's probably a lethal mutation.
Yeah. So in other words, you're kind of running the runway out on the virus's ability to change itself.
Lethal to the virus, not lethal to us. Right?
That's right. Lethal to the virus. Right. And so within that parameter, then I think, again, it's another compelling reason to just go and get vaccinated now.
So he says you're wrong. He, as we just heard, said that that just like measles, this is a single strand virus, that we will achieve immunity the same way that we did with measles. He says the flu does have more, like it mutates faster every day, he said, but coronavirus not as fast. I find it sort of ironic that at the end he says it's already, you know, mutated 12,000 times. Or there's 12,000 variants or something. At least to a lay person, that sounds like a lot, but I don't know. But what about it? I mean, in the end, he says you're going to have immunity for several years. And should there be another variant, all we'll have to do is make a new vaccine to deal with that variant, and we're good to go. Why? I mean, that seems to be the thinking of almost every, you know, scientist working for governments around the world. Where do you differ with that perspective?
Well, I mean, the conditions, the sentence that I just repeated, which was really my concern, and which was already in the first call that I made. Conditions are not fulfilled. Have you ever seen mass vaccination across all age groups against measles?
No, not that I know, because what I think about
we
measles...
We vaccinate children against measles. And why do we do this? Because measles is a childhood disease. And basically, remember about the innate antibodies. If the infectious pressure, you probably know that measles is very, very infectious. It's amongst one of the infectious viruses we know. So it breaks immediately through the innate immunity. So if you don't come with a vaccine, you cannot stop this thing. Second, what I also said is never ever vaccinate with vaccines that do not block transmission during a pandemic of a highly mutable virus. I mean, measles is not a highly mutable virus. Can be an RNA virus, but it's not a highly mutable virus. Influenza is. And I bet you, if you would do exactly the same with influenza, so conditions need to be fulfilled, you have a pandemic, you start to do mass vaccination with vaccines that cannot block transmission, you will end up with exactly the same situation. So people are comparing things that are not just comparable. I hear people saying all the time, why don't we have this with flu, et cetera, et cetera. We have herd immunity with flu. And so from time to time, immunity weakens and then you have a breakthrough. But guess what? I mean, as soon as the flu starts to spread, it encounters either young people who have very good innate immunity who will block the virus and who will even eliminate the virus, or you have people who have previously been ill and have mounted long-lived antibodies against the flu that even have broad spectrum very often, right? Mm. So this is a completely different situation. We have never been doing mass vaccination of measles. I mean, across all age groups.
Okay, so you're saying that essentially measles, we never, and this is shocking, I think, to a lot of people, because we don't really think about this. And I've watched you speak so many times that it's now sinking in that measles, as an example, had already gone through a very big spike. It was very deadly early on, right? And it was already sort of our natural immune systems had brought it down. The death rate was way, way down. By, I think, 1960, in America, 1 in 500,000 people in America died of the measles every year. So very, very low death rate. I think that of the infected, it was something like 1 in 10,000, if I'm right, or something like that, of people that caught it. Now, then we started the vaccine program. We started the vaccine after really all the elderly, all of our parents, all of the, you know, even the youth had already had immunity. So all you needed to do was to vaccinate the new entries, the children, before they got it. And they said, look, it works. We have herd immunity. But they were really relying on that naturally acquired herd immunity that was being carried by the entire planet prior to vaccination, correct? Okay.
Exactly. So you vaccinate in such a situation, the rule is very simple. You only vaccinate the vulnerable people. So in some cases, the vulnerable people are the children. In other cases, like SARS-CoV-2, the vulnerable people are rather the elderly. So in other words, the answer to your question is, I do not rule out that if in case we would have done this, as you were just explaining, with measles, really mass vaccination across all age groups, when measles came in as a new virus, that we might have seen the same problem occurring. You understand what I'm explaining?
Yes, I understand that. Now, my last question on the measles comparison by Paul Offit. You said that this vaccine we're using for SARS-CoV-2 is only prophylactic. It really only protects the person from severe disease. It does not neutralize the virus. Does the measles vaccine neutralize measles, or is it similar in that it only reduces symptoms?
Well, it will. The measles vaccine, because this is, of course, the other difference. We have not even been talking about this. People talk about vaccines as if they were all based on the same principle.
Right.
We need to distinguish between live vaccines and subunit or killed or whatever. But live vaccines, that is, of course, very, very important, because what will happen with a live vaccine is that you will have also strong stimulation of your innate immunity that can induce indeed sterilizing immunity, right?
Yeah.
So innate immunity can indeed be sterilizing. But that does not mean that you will eradicate measles, for example. Same, we had the same with polio. Remember, polio was a live attenuated vaccine. Did we eradicate polio? We didn't. We came close to it, but we didn't. Because you can still have transmission by asymptomatic people, for example. So you will control it much more easily. Why? Why will you control it much more easily with a live vaccine? Because you will have a lot of innate immune stimulation that sterilizes. We were just talking about innate immunity, how effective it is.
Yeah.
Because in contrast right now with the vaccines and with the antibodies that cannot control the infection and the transmission, innate immunity can. That is why this innate immunity is so super efficient. So if you now have a virus, a live virus that can do this, it will be much more efficient.
Okay, so in Paul Offit's comparison, these are really apples and oranges. You have what we believe to be a highly mutable disease in the SARS-CoV-2 and a less mutable disease in measles. At least we believe. We won't know because we're looking at two totally different environments, one very pressured, one not. But that's the general assumption. And the vaccine is different. A live vaccine that induces a stronger innate immune response, which really does, neutralize this virus. Maybe not eliminate completely, but it does a much better job than the vaccine that we're talking about now for SARS-CoV-2. Correct? And so those two things.
Yeah. Now, No, three things. And we didn't do mass vaccination.
We didn't do mass vaccination.
For the measles, it's a very important one, because that is where the immune pressure comes from.
Okay. Now, the last part of this, though, is Paul Offit says it doesn't matter if you're right, Geert. It doesn't matter, because even if we have selected for a variant and at some point that variant ends up becoming the dominant strain, at that point, we'll just make a new vaccine that handles that variant and end of the problem. Why is that an issue? Because that seems to be what the FDA and everybody are sort of counting on. You're seeing studies, they're talking about, well, this Delta is getting problematic. We may need a new vaccine in the future. Why are you worried that that's not going to happen? That's clearly what's going to happen. So why won't that save us?
Well, what Paul Offit is alluding to is the influenza strategy. And again, I'm always repeating my only sentence, my only call: do not vaccinate with non-sterilizing vaccines during a pandemic. You know, I mean, I'm always giving the example, you are loading your gun while you are already on the battlefield, while you get already attacked, right? If you do this before you get attacked, there is no problem. That what I was saying, normally when you get infected, a natural infection, virus comes in, there is transmission, and it's only afterwards that the antibodies peak. So the antibodies cannot really put this virus under pressure. But if you now vaccinate And this you vaccinate these people. I mean, you don't give them quarantine till they have full-fledged antibodies. You don't tell them stay at home for at least 6 weeks because you need your first shot, you need your second shot, and it's all going to take at least 6 weeks till you have full-fledged antibodies. These people go out, and the next day or the next week, they can get attacked by the virus. Why? First of all, it's a pandemic. Second, we are now dealing with a new pandemic. This is a pandemic of highly infectious variant. This is a pandemic of the Delta variant, right?
Right.
So it's a completely different... Again, the conditions are not fulfilled comparing apples with, you know, oranges or whatever.
I have another, I mean, and just because I try to help my audience and I think simply, but when you're talking about the antibodies needing that time to develop, I imagine a war, if we're in the middle of a war, the best way to handle a war is you send your cadets through basic training, they get boot camp, they get fully trained, they get all their gun training, they're working out, and then they're strong soldiers, so that the moment that we send them off to attack, they're at the best capability of winning that war. But if in the middle of the war, you know, we decide, you know what, we don't have time, or for whatever reason, we just skip, or in the middle of boot camp, we just send these children in that haven't worked out, they barely know how to work their gun. Now they're in the middle of the fight. They're coming to the enemy. That enemy is just going to overrun them and come plowing through and wreak havoc and win that war. Is that sort of a, you know, when you talk
about... Of course.
Okay.
Yeah. When it comes to fighting pathogens by the immune system, we always compare this to war situations or soldiers. It's an analogy that works out pretty well, yeah.
You'd like to see a stop this mass vaccination campaign because it's caused the pressure you're talking about. And Paul Offit's approach with mass vaccination is going to create a variant that each time we then vaccinate for, we're going to create a more and more infectious and potentially create a problem. Is the fear that one day there'll be a pathogen that we just can't, there's no vaccine can stop it? Is that basically the concern?
When I read peer-reviewed journals from, you know, molecular epidemiologists, right? I mean, they are simply predicting this, and I cannot understand. It's like I'm telling these things, but if you don't mind, I can simply, you know, citations, peer-reviewed journal by, you know, this is like Harvard Medical School, the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, MIT, etc., right? And there are statements like, and this is published early this year, when neutralizing antibodies are broadly present in the population. Broadly present in the population is when you do, for example, mass vaccination. Population-level selection for antibody-evading infection-competent viral mutants may result in rapid resurgence of SARS-CoV-2 infections. So that is one thing that we see right now, the resurgence of the infections, right? I mean, this is a very strange situation where we all of a sudden see in all these countries where we have this mass vaccination, we see an increase in infectivity. But to your point, to the resistance. So what this paper says as well is evidence from multiple experimental studies suggests that specific single mutants may be able to evade spike targeting vaccinal immunity in many individuals and rapidly lead to the spread of vaccine resistant COVID-2. One variant that can escape convalescent plasma neutralization is already in South Africa. This was beginning of this year, and could experience greater positive selection pressure once vaccines are deployed widely. Finally, the overall size of the pandemic in terms of number of active infections will play a significant role in whether the virus can be brought under control with vaccines. The speed at which neutralizing antibody resistance develops in the population increases substantially as the number of infected individuals increases, suggesting that complementary strategies to prevent SARS-CoV-2 transmission, for example, antiviral prophylaxis, and that do not exert a specific selection pressure on the virus, are key to reducing the risk of immune escape. In this context, vaccines that do not provide sterilizing immunity and therefore continue to permit transmission will lead to the buildup of large standing populations of virus, greatly increasing the risk of immune escape. And I mean, there are other publications, I don't want to take too much of your time, where it is very, very clear. I'm not the only one. I'm probably the only one who dares to speak out. But I mean, these world-class molecular epidemiologists are very, very well aware and have been warning at the beginning of this year, I must read this one, that the emergent and rapid rise in prevalence, and this was of the alpha, beta, gamma, has prompted renewed concerns about the evolutionary capacity of SARS-CoV-2 to adapt to both the rising population immunity and public health intervention, such as vaccines and social distancing. As a consequence, the epidemiological and immunological properties will likely complicate the control of COVID-19. So, I mean, Del, this is not new. People know, people have seen already that before we even started the mass vaccination, the virus was already under tremendous pressure, most likely because of high infectious pressure in areas that were very densely populated, like in South Africa, the Mandela Bay, or in Brazil, in the favelas, etc. And because of that, there was a high local immune pressure, but this pressure was directed against the spike protein. And it has already shown, they have shown that the many mutations in the S protein were really driven by immune selection pressure exerted by the population. Now, guess what? We are now coming with a vaccine the target of which is the spike protein, and the spike protein is the target of the infectiousness. So now if I'm saying I'm exerting immune pressure on top of the pressure that got existed already before the mass vaccination, I'm exerting pressure on the infectiousness of the virus, because that is what S is doing, making the virus infectious. So then, if that is the case, I would expect an explosion of more infectious virus. And that is exactly what we are seeing.
Why doesn't Paul Offit, if you say everyone knows this, if you're in immunology, you should know this. Why doesn't Paul Offit know this?
I don't know. Sometimes, Del, I mean, this is my personal opinion. I'm not saying that this is the case. Sometimes I'm under the impression that the establishment, you have always an establishment. You have this in vaccinology, in immunology, in all branches, in all disciplines, that the establishment thinks, well, you know, we have made it. I've made my reputation, my name, my career. And just based on my knowledge, I'm going to draw conclusions. If you are tackling a very complex problem like a pandemic and you intervene with infection prevention and with vaccines, and you think you can afford yourself to leave stones unturned, I mean, then for sure, this is a recipe to make big, big mistakes. So with all my respect for these people and what they have been doing, but even world-renowned professors are making right now big, big, big mistakes because they are not doing their homework or because they cannot draw from all these different fields and immunology and virology and vaccinology and evolutionary biology, etc. And if you don't do this, if there is one field that is missing because you think you are a virologist and not an immunologist, and you think I can explain this from the viewpoint of virology, then you have no right to speak. You have to familiarize yourself with those disciplines if you want to say your word in you know, the analysis of the pandemic and certainly how to tackle it.
Okay.